Friday? Is it Friday? If I don't know, it feels like this week had about 78 days in it. So I'm glad it's Friday, and I'm really glad it's 5 p.m. So it's time for American It Radio on 90.3 HD, WHPC. I'm Tom Ryan. I'm a regular here on Fridays at 5 o'clock with my lovely wife and co-host Heidi Morales Ryan. And
working.
Or not working, because it's 5 o'clock. That's why it's triple happy hour. And we call it How Music Changed on Fridays, because we pick a topic and we pretty much, you know, do everything we can to cover that topic as deeply as we can. So we have 250 that we want to cover, and if you put them all together, we hope that it would represent a really is somewhat accurate coverage of the history of recorded music, literally from its very beginning, which we did cover, and then moving on up to the present day. Some of our shows take us way back, what I call them the way back shows, and others are a bit more contemporary, where we started at the halfway point, and we bounce back and forth. And we are on the way back section now, which is to say we are covering a collection of music called the Anthology of American Folk Music. There are four series that they consist of, and each series has two CDs. It takes us about three shows to cover each, so I can pretty much predict with relative ease that this series is going to take four times three number of shows. It's going to take us 12 shows, excuse me. And this is episode 4 and part B. So this is our fifth show that we're covering. And, oh, wait a minute. Did I say this? Yeah, I got it right. I'm trying to figure this out, how many series there are. Okay, so the second part B of the series is called Social Music. And this takes us a bit deeper into the ethnological influences of American culture. And it should come as no surprise that the majority of today's songs that we're going to be playing today is what I mean, are provided largely, but not exclusively, by Southern Black culture. So herein, we touch upon the development of Acadian or Cajun music and also gospel music. But before we start, I want to ad lib a few thoughts, because this occurred to me today with the sort of day or the sort of week that I've been having. Do you ever like find that the way that things are, the contemporary life, the way things are, that it's all too much? It's just ridiculous how unbelievably complicated things can be, how impossible it is.
Google says you should do breathing exercises.
I believe it. I think that would probably be a great help, but not enough to clear my head and to make me understand even one-tenth of what is going on in the world, whether it's politics or technological things that are happening. Everything seems to be so damned confusing and difficult to discern, or frightening even. And it feels as though the golden age of music existed during the album age, which is what we do on Wednesdays. And for me, that means that the golden age of music was pretty much somewhere between the 1950s and began to dissipate somewhere around the 90s. Doesn't mean that there's not great music that is happening. Of course there is. But it's happening in a very different way. And again, it's happening with a tremendous amount of technological input as opposed to necessarily instrumental input. And it's not being distributed or recorded necessarily with human beings needing to play an instrument or sit down and write a song. It has a lot to do with technology being able to do it, and AI has gotten involved, and all of these things have made it difficult to appreciate, I think, or to even sometimes even understand. And going back to the music that we're going to be playing today is almost like a balm. A balm as in B-A-L-M, like a soothing, like a salve to for the mind. Like when things were easy, when there really was, like, people weren't using telephones really yet, you know? Think about, you know, the people were still probably riding a horse and buggy. There was that much simplicity in life. And I'm not trying to say that that made their life easier. I'm sure that it didn't. But it did make it a lot easier to understand, simpler. And it's the simplicity and the ease of understanding that allowed you to have a clear head and more or less relate more easily to the people who you knew. You didn't have to worry about TV and movies and all the things that come at you and the news. Oh my God, the news, the ways that we get hit with information. It's just all so much. So I find not only this collection to be a work of genius because the way that it's put together, that it can teach us so much about music that is now quite literally on the brink of being 100 years old. But it does more than that. It also, besides the education, I think it serves as something to almost help our minds relax a little bit and fall into a place where we can say, wow, you know, this is the roots of where we are now. It came from somewhere and it didn't die. Music, good music, never dies. I say it all the time. So that's what this is all about. Okay, so I mentioned that we're going to start, where we picking up where we left off leaves us with a couple of tracks that are based around Cajun music, in fact. The first artist that we're going to cover is named Columbus Frouge. Columbus Boy Frouge from Armadville, Louisiana, of course. Started playing accordion as a child. Was performing at dances by the age of 11. He recorded four songs for Victor Records in 1929, this being one of them. The song is called Sauk Krapod. It was a popular Cajun folk song. It means jump frog, possibly the most widely known of any Arcadian dance tune in its time. Here is Sauk Krapod. Sotkrapot, I drive a brille, me progura, da varepussy. Vai do agrapo. E vai lá pre-pronto.
Sot kaputa, čeva brilime, če boline, tad kafe. Grabogiska petar gillet i rad masella fea mamma.
These songs are so old that this comes from the time period when it was still being referred to as Acadian, which is to say from Canada. It eventually, of course, broke down to Cajun, as the word Cajun refers to it. Once the word Cajun came into play, it automatically meant that we were discussing American music, South, American music, mostly from Louisiana, from essentially what you could say the swamplands of Louisiana. Areas like Lafayette is a home, one of the most important, I guess, central areas for the development of Cajun music, as it came to be called. But at this point in time, in the late 1920s, it was still being referred to as Acadian music. And what made it interesting, and there was a bit of a change, is the use of an accordion. Now, when the music the Acadians who were in Canada were leaving for political reasons and were settling in the southern United States, they were bringing with them guitars and such. But the accordion was an instrument that was a local instrument that immediately got folded in to what the Acadians were playing. So that is why the accordion, which is one of the most basic Arcadian instruments, is seldom heard in the United States north of Louisiana. Now, that being said, one of the first artists to be recorded was by the name, with recording Acadian music, I should say, is Joseph Falcon. He was born in 1900. So he and his wife, Joseph Falcon, and his wife, Cleoma Bro, cut the very first Cajun music record called Allons à Lafayette, there it is, Lafayette, as I mentioned, on Columbia Records in 1928. That was a year before the song that we just played. Falcon and Bro's recordings were extremely popular in Louisiana and opened up the Cajun record market, eventually globally. Falcon played accordion for dances and Cajun fait de dos in his home area. Fait de dos. Heidi, could you define fait de dos?
I believe it's a bedtime story.
Is that what it's supposed to mean?
Yes.
I never knew that. I really didn't. I thought that it meant like a dance.
Dodo means to sleep.
How about that?
To make dodo.
Huh. See, now, if you go to Louisiana Jazz Fest in New Orleans, they have a stage which plays pretty much exclusively Cajun music, and it's called the Fait de Dos stage. We're taking it all the way back, so there it is. So they're called Cajun Fait de Dos, and I'm not exactly sure why. I can't answer that, but that's what they were playing in the Lafayette area. Now, Cleoma was the vocalist in the band. Joe Falcon was the accordionist. From a musical family, she also recorded with her brothers, who were the Bro Frères. Fear not, we'll be hearing them very soon. Unfortunately, she died from injuries sustained in an automobile accident in 1941. But here is Cleoma Bro with her husband, Joseph Falcon, performing the Acadian One Step. It's a whole other world. I mean, this is as American as you can get, but it doesn't sound it. I mean, it's because it, right? I mean, it's French. It's regional, but it's American born and bred. This is 100% what this is. Fairly unique. It's incredible. I'm like, Heidi, we just looked it up a little bit more. Fade to dough. What that is about go to sleep, because people would take their children and make sure that they would fall, would be like in the room sleeping so they could dance. That was the whole idea. Rather, you know, that you're coming in off of your boats and fishing and everything else. And then you'd get together, and it was always homemade instruments. Of course, remember, I was talking, you know, the times going that far back, everything was acoustic. You walked into a room and you picked up your instruments and you played them right there. You didn't have amplifiers to plug in. You didn't have electric lights. There's none of that. You just walked into the room, picked up your fiddle or your accordion, and you started to play and you danced. It was that simple. That's what I'm talking about the beauty of this and how it makes it just relaxes my mind. Okay, I mentioned the Bro Frere earlier. Well, that's the artist for the next track we're going to play. Amadi, born in 1900, lived until 1975, the leader. Ophie and Clifford, they were the brothers of Cleoma Bro, who we just heard singing, actually. Their father, Auguste, was a legendary Cajun accordionist whose career, unfortunately, predated the Cajun recording industry. Amadi Bro was the best known of the brothers for having recorded in April of 1929. That's 5 years before this track. This track that we're going to play is actually 5 years more recent than the two we just heard. It was the track that he recorded, though, in April of 1929 was the very first version. It was titled Ma Blonde Est Partie, but the song, as we would know it today, is Jolie Blonde, which has really come to be called the Cajun National Anthem, more or less. That was by Amedee Breaux. They arranged the popular song Home Sweet Home, which was written by John Howard Payne and Henry Bishop, in 1823. As you all know, that song, of course, they arranged it as a waltz. Now, this is, of course, the well-known popular song played in waltz time, a dance of much greater importance to the French-speaking here in this case than to the English-speaking rural population. The freedom with which the melody is treated, particularly in the way that it incorporates long downward runs, is also very typical of Louisiana. So the thing that makes this so special is, again, the freedom. You might not, when you think of, May It Ever So Faithful, Home Sweet Home as it is, well, it's in there, but it's unique. So here are the Breaux Frères, which is to say the Breaux Brothers. So humble. All right. So now we're going to take a jump north a little bit towards Cincinnati to a totally different style of music. Actually, jug band music. The band is called, in fact, the Cincinnati Jug Band. The band was led by a band named Bob Coleman, a guitar player, who was apparently from around the Georgia-Alabama state border, settled in Cincinnati in the 1920s. He also recorded a couple of records as a soloist. In this particular instance, though, he's playing, and there's somebody else who is performing with him, playing harmonica and a jug. Now, the thing that I love about Harry Smith in his notes is the way that he gathers information. And Harry Smith's notes are usually really cryptic and kind of phenomenal. And here's what he has to say. Blowing across a small opening in a closed vessel to produce musical sound is widely used in North and South America, the West Indies, and Africa. The melodic line played on the jug in this recording seems to represent an earlier and more inland style than the evenly spaced bass chords heard on recordings made in Memphis. Now, I would think that anything that's played on a bass instrument would be much more even than what you could possibly produce on a jug, especially when it comes to pitch control and such. But Harry Smith knows a lot more of what he's talking about than I ever could hope to. So let's hear the Cincinnati Jug Band performing the Newport Blues. Listening to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. The show is How Music Changed. I'm Tom Ryan with Heidi Morales Ryan. We do this every Friday. And you never know quite what you're going to get unless you're already tuned in to what the topic is. And this topic happens to be the American Anthology of Folk Music. And we're going to go deep. This is our fourth, actually, this is our fourth show. This is our fifth show on the topic, actually. Yeah, because it's, we'll figure it out. But be that as it may. We just heard the Cincinnati Jug Band performing the Newport Blues. And now we're going to go even further north, and I guess a bit west, too. We're going to go to St. Paul, Minnesota, and even back a bit to a song that is almost literally 100 years old. It was recorded in 1927. It's credited to Frank Cloutier, and the Victoria Cafe Orchestra. There's very few orchestral recordings, by the way, in the Harry Smith Anthology of American Folk Music. It says here that the members of the Victoria Cafe Orchestra are unknown. It also says that the Frank Cloutier Orchestra does not appear in any jazz or dance band discographies, but is assumed to have been from the Minnesota area. The song Moonshiner's Dance, which we're about to play, Moonshiner's Dance Part 1 is what we're about to play, is better known as the semi-classical piece Over the Waves, which was written by the Mexican composer Rosas. It was a staple of band concerts in the early years of the century. Okay, and according to Mr. Harry Smith, he also says that Frank Cloutier is one, I don't know how he knows this, one of the musical ancestors of Spike Jones. Because the jazz phrasing of When You Wore a Tulip is as surprising as the incorporation earlier in the dance of the hymn tune At the Cross. You can imagine what was going on in this man's mind. We'll talk about him a little bit after we play the track Moonshiner's Dance, Part 1, by Frank Cloutier and the Victoria Cafe Orchestra.
Hey, hey, Mr. Lark. Been fighting, we are trying to order a respectful place there. That's your go, boy. Thank you.
seen it. You have to realize that every single song here is picked very meticulously by one man named Harry Smith, who had a very, very distinct purpose with what he was doing. And sometimes that is a bit mysterious. But he's responsible for every single thing that we're hearing. But he had thousands of records to choose from. Literally, he was a collector, and he had thousands of old-time records. And he culled it all down to this. Now, there was a man named Chuck Pirtle who wrote a story about meeting him. And this is what he said. After I got to know Harry Smith in Boulder, Colorado in 1989, I borrowed the Folkways anthology from the library there. Harry told me when I mentioned that I'd been listening to the LPs that he himself hadn't heard them in probably 30 years. I made cassette copies for him and dropped them off at his cottage one winter day. When I stopped by later, I found Harry sitting at his desk in the corner by the door. He had these big triangular extension speakers hooked up to his boombox and had headphones on too. Tears filled his eyes. As we sat and listened together, Harry began to reminisce about working on the anthology in the early 50s, advertising for old records in small rural newspapers in North Carolina, collecting and listening to thousands of 78s, and immersing himself in the preparation of the booklet which accompanied the set. I wish I could remember all that he told me that day, but most of it is lost in the fog of time. I do know that hearing the anthology again was a great delight to Harry, and it was wonderful to see how deeply moved he was by his own creation. Now we're going to move on to something completely different and unusual on this collection. Essentially, it's a spoken piece by the Reverend J.M. Gates. The recorded sermons of Reverend J.M. Gates, minister of the Calvary Church in Atlanta, were bestsellers in the African-American communities throughout the country during the early part of the century. His recordings, by the way, they were so popular that he was able to continue to record during the Depression. He was cut over 200 sides between 1926 and 1940. He recorded 70 in 1926 alone. The first track that we're going to play and the second track, I'm going to play two tracks by him, but the first one, we'll come back before we play the second one, they both, in this, on the anthology, they appear as shortened excerpts on the anthology because the originals were released on the rather odd 12-inch 78 RPM recordings, which were obviously had a much longer running time than the average 78 RPM disc. So they're cut down here to bring them to an average length. So here's Reverend J.M. Gates with a sermon called Must Be Born Again. That's just the end segment. They probably removed the first 4 minutes of it. The same thing with the next track, which is called O Death, Where Is Thy Sting? Now, Harry Smith says this, lining hymns, quote unquote, in which the leader chants a phrase, often from the Bible, and the choir responds with the same line, singing one syllable to each note of certain very slow tunes, are believed to be one of the earliest modes of Christian religious singing in this country. Examples of music and a description of written by a Southerner can be found in a book called George Pullen Jackson's White and Negro Spirituals. Harry Smith knows his stuff. Here's Reverend J.M. Gates. Again, this is the end of the record only of O Death, Where Is Thy Sting?
I heard thy head upon my breast.
Amen.
Lay down. Oh, yeah. Now. Red one. Lay
Now, if you're a regular listener to How Music Changed, you might recall before we played that lengthy series on Jimi Hendrix, we had played a series on the history of gospel music. And in that series, we actually covered a couple of J.M. Gates' sermons. The sermons that I recall playing were actually spoken word sermons, as I recall, the ones that I played. And another thing that I recall playing was trying to discuss the history of sacred harp singing or shape note. It was one of the earlier parts of the show to discuss how eventually gospel music formed. And here is exactly what Harry Smith is doing, pretty much the exact same thing here, as he presents two songs on this collection by the Alabama Sacred Harp Singers. And here's what he says about I'll just read what he says first about the track itself. The song is called Rocky Road. He says, another method of choral singing used very early in this country. The position on the scale of each note in the melody is first sung, followed by the words from songbooks, in this case, the sacred harp, having the notes printed in several different shapes to make identification easier. Even at the present time, some of the most frequently sung tunes are ones written during and before the Revolutionary period. In this case, he always likes to basically talk about how we can synopsize the words. So he says, the lyrics are basically, father, mother, almost done traveling, mighty rocky road, go where Jesus is. Here's the Alabama Sacred Harp Singers with Rocky Road. All right, the Alabama Sacred Harp Singers. Now, the genius of Harry Smith, the thing about being a genius is like you sometimes have got to go so deep that you're willing to sometimes go far enough to get to the point where you may make mistakes. This is maybe an example of it. These are Harry Smith's words for the next track, which is entitled Present Joys. Groups led by members of the Denson family singing from the Sacred Harp in Birmingham, Alabama, have recorded most of the limited number of Shape Note songs that have been commercially issued. In addition to the two songs of this set, meaning the one we just played and the one we're about to, they recorded four sides for Columbia, four for Brunswick, 12 for Bluebird. Other good groups are the Daniels Deason Sacred Harp, Butts Sacred Harp, Falsola Singers, the Middle Georgia Singing Convention, the Roswell Sacred Harp, and of the Library of Congress, and he goes on and on and on. He goes, the type of performance on this record is usually known as a fuguing tune. Now, he's after all that information, somebody basically went and did enough detailing and came up with this. This group is presumably from rural Alabama, which has been a stronghold for sacred harp singing since at least the 19th century. This style, which combines printed songbooks with oral tradition, has obviously fallen from favor in many parts of the South. In the late 20th century, sacred harp singing has been kept alive among rural Black Americans in South Central Alabama by a grassroots community-based organization called the Wiregrass Singers, and also in other parts of the country, believe it or not, in Western Massachusetts as well, as I am very much aware, because I have a house up there. Contrary to what Harry Smith says, though, in his notes, this group is not Denson's Alabama Harp Singers. It is an Anglo-American congregation. Another similar group was brought to the Newport Folk Festival in later years to replicate the sounds of these recordings. Regardless, it's credited to the Alabama Sacred Harp Singers, and it's entitled Present Joys.
Oh,
Right. Now, I know that today's show was quite obscure. And I also, you know that you're probably thinking, like, what? The whole, if you've heard the shows before today, you would know that not everything is like this. Today's show is probably more obscure than everything else that we're going to be covering in this series by a factor of 10. This is where Harry gets really, really, really deep into specific things regarding the Cajun music and the very early, early years of gospel music. We did it ourselves when we covered our series, so I understand it. But going forward, I promise you, it's going to get a hell of a lot. I shouldn't say that in the middle of a gospel show, but a whole heck of a lot lighter than what this actual show represents. But I still love it for what it is, and I appreciate your patience. And next week, it's going to be pretty awesome, and it gets even better as we go on. The remaining shows actually get incredibly intense and incredibly cool. I'm going to leave you with one more gospel song, and it's by the Middle Georgia Singing Convention number 1. What can I say here? According to Harry, goes, the words of this song probably date from the 1920s, but the precise method of performance quite likely preceded the looser style heard in the songs above that we just played. The African-American church group, presumably from Georgia, recorded 6 songs in Atlanta in 1930, but not much is known about them. Here, then, is the Middle Georgia Singing Convention number 1, the Song of Love. Take care, everybody. Hope you join us next Friday. It's going to be a lot more fun, I promise.
It's in my heart. It happened now. to someday in my life. Then my heart my glory land. I'm on the highway.
I'm walking up from Sandy Farm.
The light of heaven that's around me and change the night to day.
It's song of love.
It's song of love is in my heart.
It happens now.
It's someday I'm alone.
It's in my heart, my glory land.
My glory land.
I'm ready for the
holy bell.
Singing
for
the
song.